about the city's money. The city has not done one thing for this camp. We've done it all on our own.
Now, that's not entirely true. They've given you some 30-odd tickets.
Well, yeah, they gave us a bunch of tickets. They're wanting a little more money. I don't know if their vacation's costing that much or what, but...
Are you still worried that the police are going to come and, should we say, start seizing tents and taking people away?
After today, they can't.
And why do you say that?
All they can do now is come back and give us another ticket. They have to come back within 24 hours to issue and arrest people on these tickets.
Mm-hmm.
Their 24 hours is up.
Actually, I think that they can call it a continuing offense and come anyway, but they can't charge you with a misdemeanor unless they do it within 24 hours.
Exactly.
Now, are you asking people to come and spend time there just to be witnesses in case police do come down?
Yes, I am.
Well, I hope they respond to your call, and I'm going to let you get to your service because we have another religious...
One thing I'd like to ask is if anybody out there has any tents that they would be willing to donate... Camp Paradise. We are in the need of tents right now because we had some more people come in last night.
Mm-hmm.
That I don't have tent room for. I already exhausted my Social Security check buying tents. If anybody has any tents, they can call me on this cell phone number, which is 278-9904. They can call me and we will even come and pick up the donation. We will do anything that it takes. If they need help, if they need some lawn work done for that tent, it will be done for them. We ain't asking for nothing for free. We're asking for people to help open their hearts up and help the people that need it here in their community.
That's 278-9904. Give a call to Larry Templeton. Are any people from Camp Paradise going to be supporting the vigil tomorrow downtown?
Yes, we are.
So that's also agreed to by some of the folks in Camp Paradise?
Yes.
Wow. Well, thank you, Larry. And if you want to get back to us after the service, or if you want to give us a little of your hell and brimstone or whatever, or heaven and paradise, give us a call.
You bet. We sure will.
Thank you.
Thanks, Robert.
And you, too, can do a little preaching on the air. Give a call to 427-3772. I'm actually going to kind of make these next few calls short because I'm expecting a call, as I said, from Wiley Drake. I'm going to read a letter from him that may give you kind of an introduction. Pastor thrown out of court building Friday, July 27th. On July 25th, this is a letter. Dear fellow Americans, my God-given constitutionally protected rights were violated, and I'm asking that the U.S. Justice Department investigate, protect, and give me back those rights. My rights under the First Amendment under the Establishment Clause, freedom of speech, and free press were taken away from me by Judge Greg Prickett and the Orange County Superior Court. At 9 a.m., I was as a member of the public in the hallway of the Superior Court building, and as a member of the broadcast press, was broadcasting a live radio show. He, too, has a pirate radio station without a license down there in Buena Park, a suburb of Los Angeles. On this broadcast, but he was taking his radio station to the courts itself and talking about the subject of jury nullification. On this broadcast, as well as many other broadcasts in a public place, I was exercising my right of free speech and practicing my religious commandments as found in the Holy Bible. I was using a standard cell phone and my normal voice to broadcast and discuss the rights of a free nation with a jury system. During the broadcast, I quoted the following events that I believe were in relationship to the members of a jury being able to exercise their God-given rights to judge both the law and the facts in a case. These quotes are as follows. 1. The jury has a right to judge both the law as well as the fact in controversy. John Jay, the first U.S. Supreme Court Justice. The jury has the right to determine both the law and the facts. Samuel Chase, U.S. Supreme Court Justice, 1796, and signer of the Declaration of Independence. The jury has the power to bring a verdict in the teeth of both law and fact, according to Oliver Wendell Holmes, U.S. Supreme Court Justice, 1902. The law itself is on trial quite as much as the cause which is to be decided, Harlan F. Stone, 12th U.S. Supreme Court Justice, 1941. The pages of history shine on instances of the jury's exercise of its prerogative to disregard the instructions of the judge, U.S. versus Daugherty, 1972. The point of all these quotes, and I'm kind of interrupting Wiley Drake's letter here, is that the jury ultimately decides, 12 people make a decision unanimously as to whether a person is guilty or innocent of any particular charge. So the government may concoct a horrible law, like the drug laws, the drug prohibition laws that criminalize marijuana and have sent hundreds of thousands of people to jail and fill up half the jails in our country. And the legislature may have gone along with this, and the judges may go along with it by enforcing those laws, and the sheriffs may be arresting people. But the ultimate power is in the hands of the people to convict once a person is arrested and charged. And one member of the jury can say not guilty and hold to that, and that can force a retrial, and that can force, in essence, a bad law to go down. Because if the jury keeps saying, refusing to convict under laws, no matter if the legislature passed it, no matter if the executive, the governor or the president signed it, no matter if the judges keep trying to enforce it and the sheriffs keep arresting people for it, if it can't be secured with convictions in court, then the people bring that law down. And so the jury is really the ultimate guardian of the people's rights. The problem, of course, is that the jury is heavily influenced by people's desire to follow orders, whether it's the orders of the district attorney or the orders of the judge. They are not likely to be too independent-minded or to be aware of their rights to just say, not just, no, the facts don't prove the case, but the law itself is wrong, and I'm not going to vote someone into jail on a jury for this crazy law. And that's an important thing people need to know, and that's what Wiley Drake was telling people by radio from the court, the corridors of the court, in a case of a homeless woman who was being charged with, you got it, sleep crime. I'm going to read a little bit about that. If I can find this part of this case. Let's see here. It's a case of, I think it's Eleanor Grew. And I actually, there was a small story about it in the Sentinel. And what I'm looking at, unfortunately, talks about this arrest of Wiley Drake for doing his broadcasting, not about the case itself, which is what I'm trying to get more information on. Wiley, as I said, should be calling in shortly, and hopefully will be able to give us some more details on the actual case. And perhaps what I should do is just simply wait for that call, and we can take it up there. But I think that the fact that we have the right, as members of the public who are called to serve upon juries, to say no to a bad prosecution, to a bad law, to a system that criminalizes young people, that we can make that decision, and we won't be fined for our decision, we won't be questioned for our decision. We have the right to do that, even if 11 other jurors on the jury disagree with us. That is a fact. It's not very well known, because the courts have made it illegal for public defenders to tell jurors that. But in the longest misdemeanor trial in Santa Cruz history up to that time, in 1978, when more than a dozen defendants were tried for trespass and essentially sleeping ban type violations in the county, in the Scott Creek Bluff case, which I guess Tom Noddy, our bubble man, talked about two or three weeks ago, maybe a month ago, on the station, the people admitted that they trespassed, but the jury refused to convict them. That was an example of jury nullification. In fact, they went further. Not just one juror, but the entire jury said not guilty. We have an incoming call.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Yes, I'm from Camp Paradise.
Uh-huh.
I'm one of the residents down here.
Okay.
My name is Richard.
Hi, Richard.
Richard Parsons.
Hey, Richard. Welcome to Free Radio.
Yes. I would just like to call in and support what was going on.
Are we talking about the vigil on Monday, or?
Just down here all together.
Mm-hmm.
Everything. I have nothing else to go to, and this is it.
And how long have you been in the camp?
I've been here for 2.5 months.
And how are the people treating you in the camp?
Absolutely wonderful.
And are you a worker? Do you have a regular job?
Yes, I do work. I had a vehicle at one point, and I was parked in a private parking lot, and one of the officers came and took my vehicle away from me, and the direct result of that, I ended up down here.
I believe that was RoboCop or Officer Perry, the African-American officer, the Santa Cruz police officer.
Yes, sir. That's the man who did.
And the parking lot was the Albertsons parking lot on Soquel?
Yes, it sure has been.
I wasn't a witness, but you talked about that quite eloquently about a month ago when I guess around when they were coming, the police were threatening to come in around July 4th.
Yes, I was here then at that time. And when the officer took my car away from me, he just told me that I was a homeless piece of shit and that I wasn't going to be able to do anything about it. And
now, he used those words, homeless piece of shit?
A homeless piece of shit, that's what he called me.
You know, I confronted Officer Perry with those very words in court when I saw him about a week after I spoke with you. And he just sort of looked at me, looked away, and continued walking. So he didn't deny that he'd said that.
No.
So, I mean, it's not that an individual officer shouldn't have free speech and that we all shouldn't be able to be honest with each other, however foolish or ill-advised our comments are. But an individual wearing a badge and a gun who uses that kind of abuse is in a particularly, well, it puts the individual hearing it in a particularly difficult position because you can't really challenge that without the fear of getting a couple of bullets in your chest, right?
Exactly right. You know, and it did kind of put a little fear in me, but, you know, what could I do at the point? He was taking my home away from me.
And now, of course, the police are trying to take homes away from the people at Camp Paradise.
Yes, exactly, and then there's really nowhere to go. The other day that they came down here and gave me a ticket, and I was one of the first few that got the ticket, the officer offered me, after I got the ticket, offered me a two-day voucher. In other words, like trying to buy me out of this situation. And after the 2 days, I would really have nowhere else to go but come back here again. And it was really hard for me to understand that.
Well, they don't want your kind around here.
I know, but, you know, I'm no different than any other human being. I don't have the abilities to have rent and pay a deposit and, you know, and do them kind of things in life, which I'd like to. I hurt myself 18 months ago on a job, and I've got 9 ruptured discs, and it's really hard at times for me to move around.
So I understand also that the police were supposed to go in and offer people vouchers, and then if they didn't take them, then give them tickets. That was not the order in which it was done?
No, it wasn't. So what they did is wrote me a voucher, and then they wrote me a ticket, and then they bribed me with a voucher to leave. Right after that.
But apparently the bribe didn't work, huh?
No, not at all, because I'm not moving. I think this is a good purpose down here, and that's why I moved down here 2.5 months ago, just to be part of this, you know, so that I think it's absolutely wonderful things happening here. I've never had friends before like I have here. I've never been in the homeless community. I've always worked and had a really good job, and all of a sudden my life fell apart, and I got hurt, and I ended up homeless, and I had to learn to eat with these people and sleep with these people, and it was real difficult at first, and these people absolutely taught me things that, you know, no other person could teach me, and I was real grateful for these people.
Well, I know that there's been a lot of kind of, you know, concern in the camp as to how to proceed. I guess one proposal floated by Attorney Paul Sanford was to get an extension of a month and then agree to leave even though you have no place to go, and even though no such proposal has actually been offered to the camp. What did you think of that idea?
Well, I don't really like that idea. I don't like promises. So I'd rather just have things straight out that, you know, we have this building to go to, say like the armory. If they open up the armory and let us go to the armory, there's a solution there. But see, the armory doesn't open until November. And so until November, we don't have nowhere to go until then.
Well, perhaps until November, the authority should lay off Camp Paradise and start dealing with the fact that not just Camp Paradise, but there are 1,000 to 2,000 other homeless people in Santa Cruz have no legal place to sleep. And it's not so much that the city owes them a place to sleep. It rather owes them the respect not to arrest them if they sleep where they must.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah, this has been studied by one task force after another. And there are many, many places that the city could open up, ranging from Bob's Pine Grove Campground, although it's not clear whether they would sell that, places in the Pogonip, the San Lorenzo Benchlands, the county parking lot for people in vehicles, the Emmeline Street parking lot, wilderness areas or green belts around the city. I mean, the list really goes on and on and on. And it's just simply a lack of will and a sort of a belief that some people just aren't worth treating as human beings, and that is the real sin and the real crime in my mind.
Mm-hmm, exactly. And I didn't realize that these people got treated like this until I ended up being one of them, and that was the real shocker on my end. You know, it's just like, it's really odd. It just should just stop. I mean, anybody could become homeless at any moment, just like myself, and if it wasn't for what I landed in, I'd bless the ones that land where they're going to land.
Now, I understand from Larry that people are being invited to come down to Camp Paradise, particularly at this time, because of the danger that police will return and just start destroying tents and arresting people?
Yes. Yes, that's what we have all fear of here.
Now, if that begins to happen, I guess the camp probably hasn't made any firm decisions, but I know at least some people were saying that they intend to either set up the campsite at City Hall or set up a campsite back where it is here, or maybe have a mobile camp where they kind of a wheelchair parade where the wheelchairs and shopping carts and they move around town looking for a place to sleep, since their own camping area, which is kind of out of the way, and, you know, it doesn't seem to be causing any grief to merchants downtown, it isn't removing any business, has been destroyed by police.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. We haven't made no plans yet down here. All we're doing is standing ground and waiting to see what was going to happen.
Mm-hmm. Well, I appreciate your call, Richard. Is there more you want to say to Free Radio? Anything that we should know?
No, I'm just very glad that you guys are out there and that you reached the community. Thank you very much.
I'm glad you, as a member of the community, called in.
Thank you.
All right.
Bye-bye.
And you, too, can call in. Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. I'm going to keep calls short because, again, I'm expecting this long-distance call from Southern California, hoping that Wiley Drake doesn't forget he may have tried to call in during that last call from Richard of Camp Paradise. And thank you, Richard, for calling in. In the meantime, let's hear a little bit of more of NASNA. Here's a fellow from Tucson talking about what's happening in Tucson, Arizona.
So it's about 9:10 on July 27th.
And actually, no, strike that. Tucson's coming up shortly. This is a Food Not Bombs woman from San Francisco, California. Food Not Bombs not only provides food for homeless people, but also provided food for all these folks coming in from the homeless newspapers. Food Not Bombs serves in Santa Cruz, too. If you want to get involved, 425-3345, or is it 3455? I wish I knew which. Try them both, 425-3345 or 425-3455, or... And you'll find out, or I guess they also serve at the town clock. And again, the hours I don't have, but they're a worthy organization.
I guess it's the new school we're talking to, that Food Not Bombs, or...
Catherine Jones.
And, of course, the Oatmeal Man.
Wayne Standerwick.
And, Catherine, it was in the papers some time ago that Willie Brown was just trying to clean up the town by making sure that you moved your operation somewhere else.
Right. That's true, and they've had different ways of making sure that happens. They've been doing some sort of covert things, like saying the lawn is under repair and making people not sit on it. They removed benches from UN Plaza. About a month and a half ago, they arrested Food Not Bombs.
Go ahead.
About a month and a half ago, they arrested 4 Food Not Bombers for serving food in UN Plaza, which is a tactic that they used extensively back in 1995. But I think that they realize that we have a lot more support nowadays, and it's going to be a lot harder to use that tactic, so they're being a lot more subtle about it.
How many times a week do you serve?
We serve 5 nights a week at 5:30, and then we also serve a lunch at Golden Gate Park.
And you find the crowds are increasing, decreasing, or remaining stable?
Definitely decreasing. And so one thing that we're starting to do is one of our cookhouses is deciding to put on a mobile cookhouse where they're going to sort of go around the city and find where people are, because people are hiding now. They're definitely scared off by the sweeps that are going on.
They've said this, or is it possible that the economy is at a strange upturn and nobody uses Food Not Bombs anymore?
Yeah, I don't really think that that's what's going on. As a matter of fact, we've been talking to the folks who still come to our servings, and they're telling us that their friends are, you know, seeking cover because they're worried.
Really?
Yeah.
How about Food Not Bombs itself? Are you showing up at political events as well? I guess this is a sort of a political event.
Yeah, definitely. That's one of the things that Food Not Bombs is really trying to do, is make ourselves known as advocates for the homeless, and we do solidarity at political events whenever we can. And we're also trying to work on a campaign to help this quality of life thing be turned into much more of a positive direction.
Are your meetings as interminable as ever?
Yes.
I was reassured to hear that. And finally, are you getting paid to do this at this particular, getting kicked down from NASNA?
They gave us a budget to to serve the food here, but we would be here anyway, even if they didn't. So.
How long have you been food not bombing?
I've been doing it for about 5 months. So.
What about the old timers? Chris Crass still around?
Chris Crass is still around. He's doing more alliance like events, coming out for solidarity things. He's not really as regular anymore because he's got a lot of other stuff going on.
Rahula?
I haven't really seen Rahula as much anymore.
That old geezer, Keith McHenry?
I haven't seen him around either, actually.
Hiding in Arizona, yeah. No doubt. Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Anything you want to add?
Not really.
Five after one, we're talking to
Ken Moshesh.
And Mr. Moshesh, you are a writer, video journalist, a former professor?
Going to interrupt this conversation with Berkeley African-American activist and homeless former professor Ken Moshesh, who recently won a ruling from the Berkeley court overturning 647J, the anti-lodging law, the statewide anti-lodging law, overturning it in terms of how it was applied to homeless people, to talk with a man who has been attending a trial of a homeless woman in Buena Park, California, Wiley Drake. Hi, Wiley.
Hey, good afternoon.
And Wiley, you're not only a man who's an avid supporter of homeless people. You're a person who runs a church that facilitates nighttime accommodations for homeless people, defends them in court as when they're harassed by police in the vicinity, and has been actually carrying on a kind of a lobbying effort for the rights of homeless people in Buena Park, California, a suburb of Los Angeles.
Well, that's true. And actually, about half of the people that come to us, probably more than half, but at least half the people that come to us that we're dealing with, and by the way, we're dealing with it from a religious perspective, but we are dealing with it primarily from a Good Samaritan point of view. That is, we provide them a mailing address, a place to sleep, take a shower, get food, all the basics of life so that they cannot, you know, they're not homeless anymore. Because, you know, a lot of people say, well, why don't those homeless people just get a job? Well, how do you fill out an application if you don't have a mailing address? So that's where we start them, and we're pretty strict, and not everybody qualifies for our program. We're no drinking, no smoking, no doping, you know, those kind of things. And we are religiously oriented, but we still get a lot of people that say, okay, I want that program because it'll help me get back on my feet. Well, usually, very quickly, right out of the ballpark, so to speak, as soon as we help someone, we find out they have legal problems. On the one end of the spectrum, it may be a jaywalking ticket or an automobile violation ticket, and then it turned to a failure to appear because they didn't have the money, they were homeless, and they have a failure to appear. Now they got a warrant for their arrest, and now they, quote, are a fugitive. Or it may be as severe as someone who's been caught on with a felony charge of some sort. And typically, you know, the program, as everybody knows, is if you got a lot of money in America, you can buy good justice. If you don't have any money, you are at the mercy of the public offenders. I mean, defenders.
There you go.
And and so you go to them. And by the way, I want to say I have a great deal of respect for many of the public defenders, because many of the public defenders do a good job, but most of them either are ill-qualified because they're new, or even if they're not ill-qualified, they're so overworked and have such a caseload. Melvin Belli would have died 50 years ago if he'd had the caseload that some of these public defenders had.
Call them public pretenders.
Public pretenders, okay. But so anyway, and in fact, as I said, we have had our problems with public defenders, but we've got a string of wins, for example, with a public defender's office here in Orange County, the North Justice Center, on one particular police officer against homeless people that was so egregious. We have a 6-win run on him at this point.
What's his name?
His name is Thomas Reyes. R-E-Y-E-S, and he's a cop here in Buena Park, and he's been terribly egregious to the poor people.
And what kind of wins have you had? What have been the charges against the homeless people?
Well, it's been simple things, like one particular case where a guy was given a citation for scavenging, taking aluminum cans out of a dumper. And the prosecutor said, public defender said, do you want to fight this? And this guy said, yeah, I want to fight it. I'm not guilty. You know, I don't want to go down. I want to fight it.
Now, we're talking a misdemeanor charge? Or
yeah, this is a misdemeanor charge.
So that means it was before an actual jury here in Santa Cruz, where more than 30 people at the Camp Paradise area were ticketed on Friday for sleeping or actually for camping because they had a campsite. These were infractions, with the exception of the five charges against the leader, Larry Templeton, who's actually holding religious services right now, even as we speak. But you are talking about a jury trial where, in fact, you can argue things like the necessity defense or even more important,
correct,
jury nullification, which is what I was reading. I was reading your letter earlier talking about how you have been broadcasting from the courthouse and gotten essentially your mic cut off by
absolutely
the judge.
Well, here's what happens. Because court, typically, people have to go to court, quote, at 8 o'clock. When they get a citation or an infraction or a misdemeanor, the subpoena says show up at court at 8 o'clock. Well, the courts don't even open until 8:30, quarter to 9. The judge doesn't get his robe on until 9:15. So, in essence, you really don't get your case heard until about 9:30.
Hurry up and wait.
Yeah, so I broadcast a little radio show on the Internet called Wiley Drake in Buena Park. Mm-hmm. And we do that 1 hour, Monday through Thursday, from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m.
So is this a pirate station, Wiley, or is this just on the Internet?
It's just on the Internet.
So you have yet to come out there and kick butt on the actual FM radio there.
Well, nobody will give me a chance, and I don't have the money to do it, so I'm just waiting for the opportunity.
Okay, well, see if we can get somebody. A transmitter costs less than $1,000.
Yeah, well, you're talking big bucks to a little church like ours.
Well, let's start a fund for Wiley Drake. Go ahead.
Amen. Well, we're certainly open to that. Mm-hmm. But here's what happens. So a lot of times I go over there with people and hurry up and wait. And so they don't even get in the courtroom until after 9 o'clock, and I have to say I'm sorry, but I have to go outside in the hallway and do my radio show. In fact, one case we had where a guy had a 9 o'clock arraignment, and I simply said, I'm going to be on the air, I'm your witness, so walk in, tell the judge, Your Honor, I do not want to be arraigned yet because one of my witnesses is out in the hallway doing a radio show, and he won't be through until 10 o'clock. Could I ask for a continuance until 10 o'clock? Mm-hmm. And the judge granted it. So I continued, and I can do my radio. The beauty of an Internet show is that you don't have to have a transmitter. You can use a cell phone.
Mm-hmm.
And so I simply call the station. They connect me through the cell phone to the board, and it goes Internet. So I was doing my talk show, and my talk show has a threefold emphasis: justice, mercy, and faith.
Mm-hmm.
And we try to balance those equally. We try to deal with all three of those subjects.
Now,
obviously, I'm a Baptist preacher, so I have a tendency to be a little prejudiced toward faith.
But you have also been covering a lot of trials where homeless people have been accused of things like sleeping, right?
Absolutely. And so I just go outside the courtroom, and the only thing that's happened to me in the past is the Orange County Sheriff's Department came to me a couple of weeks ago and said, Pastor Drake, what you're doing here in the hallway is perfectly legal, using a cell phone and broadcasting. But you've been a little loud. You got a big booming voice. It carries. And so please hold it down. And so I said I would, and I did.
Mm-hmm.
Now, on last week, I was there in the courthouse waiting to appear, waiting to make a 10 o'clock appearance as a witness in the Diane Grew 67-year-old homeless grandmother case.
Tell us about that case a little bit before you tell us what happened in the
courts. Well, basically, back in January, she was cited for camping, a violation. It's a misdemeanor. She was a two-time loser, so they said, hey, the last time we put you in jail for 8 days, this time if you'll plead guilty, we'll give you 15 days. She's 67 years old. She's got 8 screws and a metal plate in her leg, and she's not very healthy. And she said, I don't want to go to jail, so I'm going to fight it. So our attorney, John Alexander, took her case pro bono, and we've been fighting it, and it is now at the jury trial stage.
Mm-hmm.
Early in the week, last week, it was not even to the jury yet, and I was subpoenaed as a witness. And when I got there, the jury had not been chosen. And as it turned out, I didn't have to be there, but I was there temporarily. But I went there at 9 o'clock and said, hey, you know, I'm here. I'm covering the Diane Grew case. And the reason I'm here is that I have to witness, and I have to be a witness at 10 o'clock. And this is my radio show, and this is what we talk about. And I started talking about justice. And I started talking about the fact that jury members have a right to vote, according to John Jay, the original U.S. Supreme Court justice, and many others. And I began to quote these guys saying that, indeed, the jury has a right to judge both the law and the fact in the case.
Oh, judges don't like to hear that.
And they don't like to hear that. And I said that on my show, and so I began to talk about that. Now, when I began my show at 9 o'clock, I was in a hallway. There was no one within 30 feet of where I was at.
Mm-hmm.
About 20 minutes after, as I'm into my show, about 20 minutes into my show, I see a group of people coming down the hallway, about 75 or 80 people. Coming down the hallway. About half of them had jury badges on. and they started accumulating in the hallway.
Well, you don't want to tell the jurors about their rights, Wiley.
Of course not. And so I said, well, now I had two choices. One is be fearful and say, oh, golly, there are jury members present that might hear me, so I better not say anything about jury rights, but I was already talking about that, and I'm sort of stubborn and sort of simple-minded, and once I'm on a roll, I don't like to quit.
Mm-hmm.
So I kept talking about it, and I quoted John Jay and so on and so forth.
Now, did the jurors seem to take any interest in this?
Well, there were a few people that sort of looked over my direction. And fact of the matter is, I moved away because I did not want to be accused of trying to influence the jury.
Mm-hmm.
So I moved away as far as I could and still have a strong signal. And about 25 minutes after 9 o'clock, two Orange County deputies came to me. I'm broadcasting live on my cell phone. And they said, Judge Gregory L. Prickett has ordered you to come to his court. And I said, for what? And they said, we don't know. He just ordered us to come bring you to his court. And I said, what am I being charged with? They said, we don't know. Judge Prickett said, come to his court. And I very politely said, please tell Judge Prickett, I know him. I had spoken to him early the morning in the hallway, and I'll be there when my radio show's over in about 35 minutes and be glad to talk to him. And they said, Judge Prickett said, if you don't come, we're going to arrest you and bring you to his courtroom. And so I said, ladies and gentlemen, we're on Crusade Radio, and we're talking, and we're about to be, I think, arrested for broadcasting in the hallway. And so they said, come with us. And I said, no. They grabbed me by my arms, drug me down the hallway.
Were you broadcasting all the while?
I was broadcasting all the while, saying I've got two burly Orange County deputies dragging me down the hallway. I'm not going under my own power.
Uh-huh.
I'm going under the power of two deputies.
Mm-hmm.
And as we started in the door of the courtroom, they jerked the phone out of my hand, slammed it shut, and
cut off the broadcast.
You know, and cut me off of broadcasting.
Mm-hmm.
They drug me up to the bar of the court, and Judge Prickett turned and said, Pastor Drake, it's been told to me, yada, 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 that you're talking about this court, this Justice Center, and you've been talking about me personally. And is that true? And I said, Judge, I have no comment. And he kept asking me questions, interrogating me. I kept saying, I'm not, no comment.
That's the wisest thing to do when police or other judicial officials begin to interrogate you, yeah.
And so finally he said, well, when he realized that I wasn't going to be intimidated by his interrogation and that I wasn't going to try to answer his questions, the defense attorney of all people, and this was a case that they were on that he was concerned about, was about a cop shooting.
Mm-hmm.
A cop had been shot and was still alive and was there to testify to the fact that he had been shot by this criminal.
Mm-hmm.
And the defense attorney, which I thought was surprising, didn't want me to be out in the hallway, and she's one of the ones that complained to the judge. And so then the judge simply said, well, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm ordering you, and I have a right to do this, he told me, and I didn't question it, you know, except in my mind. I didn't think he did. But he said, I'm ordering you not to be within 200 yards of this courtroom. You're not to talk to any jury member. You're not to use your cell phone. Now get out of my courtroom. And I want you to escort Pastor Drake. And then he said, is there any questions? And I said, no. And then he turned to the prosecuting attorney of this case and said, do you or the defense attorney, because the defense attorney had already said her little diatribe about how I was tainting their jury and how no one would get a fair trial if jury members got to vote their conscience. Yada, 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 yada.
The defense attorney said this?
The defense attorney. Blew my mind.
Amazing.
Blew my mind. Obviously, she really is brainwashed.
Huh.
In fact, she was threatening later when I was in the hallway to get a restraining order against me, a personal restraining order against me. So anyway, then the prosecution attorney said, I only have one question, Your Honor. Did Pastor Drake come in this courtroom under his own power, or was he arrested? And Judge Prickett turned and said, I'll have to ask the sheriff's officers, did Pastor Drake come willingly? They said, no, Your Honor, we arrested him and brought him here. And so he said, okay, I want you to escort him. Any other questions? Nobody had any questions. Pastor Drake, do you have any questions? I said, no, Your Honor, except what am I being charged with? And he said, you're not being charged. I'm ordering you out of this courtroom, out of this courthouse, 200 yards from this courtroom. And so as we went out the front door, he said, you escort Pastor Drake out. As we went down in the hallway again, being escorted, I said, how far is 200 yards?
Mm-hmm.
Do you have a tape measure? And they said, no. 200 yards, we assure you, though, is outside the courthouse.
Mm-hmm.
And they were right, by the way. We found out, actually, 100 yards is outside the courthouse.
Yeah, we were barred from being near the city council offices for
mm-hmm.
5 months. I think it was, gosh, I've forgotten how far, but it was like a football field.
Yeah. So anyway, they marched me out, threw me out in the street, and as we went out, I said, listen, I've been thrown out of better places than this, and I got an ovation, clapping ovation from people standing around the courthouse.
What about, including the jurors? Or no?
Well, some of them clapped, some didn't.
I see.
So anyway, I went outside, and I dubbed the parking island as the Isle of Patmos because I had been exiled, as John the Apostle was in the New Testament, to the Isle of Patmos.
Mm-hmm.
And so I said, I've been exiled. I reconnected with the station, did the last 10 or 15 minutes of my program up until 10 o'clock. And then at 10 o'clock, I made my way back toward the courthouse where I met the attorney from the Diane Grew case. And I said, am I correct in that I am subpoenaed today to be in courtroom number 17, which is down the hall from this Judge Prickett? And he said, yes. And he said, in all honesty, I don't think you'll testify today, but you are subpoenaed. You do need to be there. And I said, well, I got a problem because I've just been kicked out of the courthouse. And he said, well, I think the judge's subpoena as a witness would have precedent over Prickett. And so I said, okay. So we went back into the courthouse, contrary to the judge's orders, went to the courtroom for Diane Grew, where we found out within about 5 to 10 minutes that indeed the case was not going to proceed. They did not have the jury chosen yet, and that my services as a witness would not be needed till the following day.
Mm-hmm.
And so I said, thank you, Your Honor, and he said, you're dismissed, but you're on call. So I walked out of the courtroom, down the hall. As I walked down the hall, two Orange County Sheriff's deputies, the same two that arrested me before, said, are you Wiley Drake? And I said, you guys just drug me down the hall an hour ago. You know who I am. And they said, are you Wiley Drake? And I said, yes, I am. And they said, you're under arrest. They drugged me back in before Judge Prickett, and he got red in the face and pitched a little fit on the stand and said, I can't believe you violated my court order. It's not even 2 hours old. Yada, 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 yada. And what do you have to say? And I said, I don't have anything to say, Your Honor. And
so you didn't defend yourself by saying that I've been subpoenaed in another court. You just said nothing.
I said, I don't have anything to say. And then finally, it was looked pretty obvious. They were getting the handcuffs out.
Right.
Looked pretty obvious that I was going to spend the night in jail. I had some other things I wanted to do, so I thought, well, you know, I'm a chicken about this. I don't want to go to jail. And so I said, Your Honor, can I say something? He said, yeah. I said, Your Honor, the reason I violated your court order was not to disrespect your court, but that I had a subpoena from Judge Marion down the hall. And so then he got even double red and began to realize, I think, that he thought, okay, now this is going to be a contest between judges, my order or the other judge's order.
Uh-huh.
The attorney was there with me. And he said, I'm going to serve you, Pastor Drake, tomorrow with an order, and I'm going to give it to your attorney. I said, Your Honor, this is not my attorney. I do not have an attorney. If you want to serve me, you'll serve me.
Mm-hmm.
And he really got upset then. And so he asked the attorney, he said, did you not warn Pastor Drake a week and a half ago that he shouldn't be broadcasting live in the courthouse? And the attorney said, yes, Your Honor, I did warn him. And he said, were you not his attorney back in a previous case? And, of course, Judge Prickett was my attorney when they were trying to put me in jail for 5 years.
You don't mean Judge Prickett. You mean this other attorney.
Well, Judge Prickett was my judge.
Oh, he was your judge.
He was my judge, and this was also my attorney.
I see.
And so, but I made it clear to him that he was not my attorney now,
mm-hmm.
even though he's my friend.
John Alexander.
He's Diane's attorney.
Mm-hmm.
And so then the judge says, okay, I'm ordering you to be in court on Thursday morning at 9 o'clock.
And this was last Thursday.
This was last Thursday. So last Thursday at 9 o'clock, I started my radio show from the parking lot and did about the first 15, 20 minutes of it, then turned it over to a cohort, let him continue it to tell the people that I indeed was going in to visit Judge Prickett.
Mm-hmm.
So I went into Judge Prickett, and Judge Prickett then issued me an order that said five things. Number one, I was not allowed to broadcast my show from within the North Justice Orange Center, and he gave me a copy of a map delineating the boundaries, which is parking lots included.
Mm-hmm.
So I was prohibited, number one, from broadcasting my radio show.
This is called make it up as you go along law.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And number two, it says Mr. Drake is prohibited from the use of a cell phone or a telephone while inside the North Justice Center. Mr. Drake is prohibited from communicating with any juror.
Are you allowed to go to the bathroom inside the...
Well, evidently, because then number four says, Mr. Drake is prohibited from being within 100 yards of Department N-12, this is Judge Prickett's courtroom, unless, it says, his attendance within that area, and that's anywhere in the courthouse, obviously,
mm-hmm.
has been previously ordered or required by the issuance of a lawful subpoena, and Mr. Drake is scheduled to testify that day or has a promise to appear on a traffic ticket, an arraignment letter, etc., etc., or with the leave of this court judge or commissioner of the North Justice Center. So in essence, I'm not to be within that courthouse unless I'm subpoenaed in, and if I am even subpoenaed in, I'm not allowed to use my cell phone or even the public telephone.
So in other words, you're no longer allowed to have access to the public courts.
That's correct.
Unless you're subpoenaed.
That's right. And then the last thing is, this order shall remain in effect until further notice. So, you know, I've tried to be as turn-the-other-cheek Christian as I could, and I've been over backwards. I've tried to work with the city of Buena Park. I've tried to work with the court system. But this was sort of the
last straw.
Mm-hmm. So on Monday morning of this past week,
mm-hmm.
We filed a $2 million lawsuit against Judge Prickett, the Superior Court of California, and the State of California under U.S. 43-1983
mm-hmm.
for violation of my First Amendment rights, Fifth Amendment rights, Sixth Amendment rights, and 14th Amendment rights.
Good for you.
And First Amendment rights, obviously, he violated my freedom of speech and the freedom of the press. I'm a member of the press, certified, you know, etc. So he violated my freedom of speech as a citizen. He violated my freedom of press as a pressman. He violated my Fifth Amendment rights because he interrogated me in the courtroom in front of public without any Miranda, without any thing to guarantee me against self-incrimination. I did not incriminate myself, but he
tried to get you to.
He tried to get me to, so he violated my Fifth Amendment rights. Sixth Amendment rights, even in issuing this order, he violated my Sixth Amendment rights because he said that a jury member said that Wiley Drake was yelling into his telephone, and that was one of the reasons he was issuing the order. And I did not get a chance to face my accuser. Sixth Amendment says you have a right to face your accuser.
You weren't even being charged with a crime.
Well, I wasn't even charged, but yeah. Even in the order, you have a right
mm-hmm.
to face your accuser.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, the 14th Amendment right, because of violation of due process, I received no due process. So we filed that order on Monday morning,
mm-hmm.
and the Central District of the United States Federal Court. We are very fortunate in that it was not assigned, even though we file all of our papers in the federal court in Orange County. We were assigned to two judges in Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
So we feel like we'll get a better shot in Los Angeles than we would in Orange County.
Now, what's the time span before you? Civil cases usually take a long period of time, right?
Well, this is a civil case in one sense, but it's somewhat of a fast track because we filed our case on Monday, the 1st. And then we served Prickett, by the way. We had the privilege, I didn't, but process server had the privilege of serving Prickett in his courtroom.
Mm-hmm.
And to show you what an adult kind of person he is, or in honesty and childish he is,
mm-hmm.
the process server walked into his court. He did not have his robe on. He was in civilian clothes. He was up, not on the bench, but in the courtroom. And he walked up and said, I have federal court papers to serve on Judge Gregory Leonard Prickett, and I know you to be Judge Prickett, and here's the papers. And Judge Prickett threw a tantrum and said, I refuse service.
You just dropped him at his feet, right?
And so we basically handed him to the bailiff and said, we've done due diligence. This is your service. You have been served.
Mm-hmm.
And then the process server, just to be on the safe side, did several things. Number one, he went downstairs to the administrative judicial office of the courthouse and served, because that's where you serve the state, and he served the state and had them sign for service, as well as he served the judge through the administrative office, and the administrative manager of the office signed as well for Judge Prickett
mm-hmm.
and received service for him. And we have also mailed to the federal court in Los Angeles what's called a due diligence form. It's a form where, for example, you say, I did due diligence, mm-hmm. they wouldn't receive them, I dropped them at their feet, and you fill out that little form.
Has the media been covering this?
Not really. They've talked about it just slightly when they talk about the Grew case. They say something about the Grew case, and then they, in the printed press, is almost covered.
And there's that Wiley Drake causing trouble again.
Yeah, you know, mm-hmm. the, you know, the the case is going forward, and Wiley Drake's causing trouble again, you know, or it took a strange turn of events when Wiley Drake, you know, yada, yada, yada.
All right. Actually, when Judge Prickett, boy, that's a hard name for me to pronounce, but let me get back to the GRU case. Where's that at? Can you give us a little more background on that?
Because basically, this was the case where she was charged with camping, violating a camping ordinance and a storage ordinance. A policeman has testified. Two or three cops have testified already in the case. I testified. The attorney asked me some questions that he was sorry he asked later because I revealed some things that they weren't really aware of. The judge has tied the lawyer's hands to some degree. He is allowing him the necessity defense, but one of the things that we had wanted to do was to present a fact that the city of Buena Park has an agenda and a vendetta to go after the homeless people. And the judge won't allow Mr. Alexander to do that.
Now, give us the main pieces of evidence that lead you to that conclusion.
Well, the pieces of evidence go back about 5 years. 4 years ago, they filed charges against me. They filed 11 criminal misdemeanors against me, and every one of them was filed because I wouldn't kick the homeless people out of my church. They said, we have Knott's Berry Farm, we have Medieval Times, we have all these things. Lot of money. Last year, for example, Buena Park bragged that the tourists brought $225 million into the coffers of Buena Park through Knott's Berry Farm and the other tourist attractions here in town. Mm-hmm. And they said, we don't want these homeless people in town. We want them out of here. And the homeless people have reported to us many times that when they've complained to the police about being harassed, about being ticketed for possession of stolen property, i.e. a shopping cart, when they've been ticketed for jaywalking, when they've been ticketed for camping, open container of liquor in public.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can go to any park here in town on any Saturday, and as long as you go up there in your SUV and take your cooler out and drink beer, it's no problem. But if you're homeless and you go by and get a can of beer and you're drinking it in public, then you're arrested because you're in violation of a city ordinance.
How many shelter beds are there in Buena Park for people other than your church?
Zero.
And how many homeless people are there in Buena Park?
Probably 500-600.
And how many people are in the city limits generally?
You mean the total population?
Yeah.
75,000.
Uh-huh. It's a little bit larger than Santa Cruz, half again as large. And so you are, in essence, the social services for for homeless people.
We are, yet other than the city does have a little thing called the Coordinating Council, because they get money from the federal government. We don't, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But they get money from the federal government to help poor and homeless, and they have a coordinating council where they do give out food. They don't provide any shelter. They will tell you they do provide motel vouchers, and they do that from time to time, but it's like a one night, and typically they're out.
Plus, you pointed out that they had a law, a motel law, that prohibited people from staying for more than 30 days or something?
Yeah, they had a 30-day, then they moved it to 60, then they moved it to 60 in a 180-day period, and there's also a case pending in that, by the way. In fact, I think that decision has been made, but I haven't heard the results of that. We'll find out probably this next week how that case came out. The Motel Owners Association formed and brought a lawsuit against the city of Buena Park in reference to that.
Mm-hmm. How many homeless people or otherwise homeless people would you say use motels to essentially live in?
Beg your pardon?
How many people are using motels as residences because they have no housing or they have no shelter? Or
In the county, you mean?
In Buena Park.
In Buena Park, we run about 200 here,
mm-hmm.
you know, at our church. On a daily basis.
Right, but how many people have to use motels because there's no housing?
Oh, there's probably another 300 people, probably something like that.
Mm-hmm. Now, getting back to the GRU case.
Yeah.
What's happened this week? Give us a kind of a blow by blow.
Okay, well, blow by blow was that first part of the week the jury was chosen, and so they started a jury trial.
No homeless people on the jury, I assume.
I don't know. I'm assuming they're probably not. I've seen the jury, but because I'm a witness, I can't sit in on the trial.
Uh-huh.
Which I don't know why that's true, but anyway, that's the way they do it.
Excluding witnesses, yeah.
And so they look to be pretty, you know, the jury looks good to me. And, you know, of course, you never know, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You're making a, you know.
Not as yuppie as it could be.
Not quite as, you know, it, yeah. In Orange County, in all honesty, it looks pretty good there. It looks like to me there are probably at least three or four people on there that would not be in your yuppie, why don't those lazy bums get a job.
Would they know about their jury nullification rights, do you think?
Most of them do not, but that's one of the reasons, you know, I'm glad this thing came about. It wasn't my intention, but I think that did bring it about, and I think some of them, and by the way, some of the folks from FIJA, the Fully Informed Jury Association, have been in the courthouse passing out their flyers.
Oh, excellent.
And so there are a few of those that are being gutsy and doing that, and so we're doing that.
That's an organization we contacted in Santa Cruz about a decade ago trying to get the same kinds of rights for and a woman who was being accused of serving the homeless free food and ultimately convicted, Sandra Loringer, here in Santa Cruz. But so anyway, the jury was chosen, and then what happened?
Well, the jury was chosen, and then, of course, they began to try the case, and Mr. Palmer, the gentleman that we refer to as Catman Palmer, because he's the one that said homeless people are like cats. If you don't feed them, they'll go away. If you do feed them, they stick around.
Mm-hmm.
And he used that in the closing remarks of my case. And then at that point...
Your case was, of course, the case of you're being arrested and... Well, not arrested, but tried for allowing homeless people to live in your church.
Correct, correct. Mm-hmm. And so he started putting his case on. He had pictures of this lady sitting in a chair alongside the railroad track, you know, where they were, quote, camped out. And then he had some officers testify. And the officer lied on the stand a couple of times that I'm aware of from what people told me, because... First of all, he said that, you know, he was just, you know, that he wasn't there to pick on the homeless. He was just there by chance, and that when he went down the railroad track that night, he was just looking. He had no idea that he would be there to arrest anybody. But then in his same testimony, he testified that before he started down the railroad track, he called for backup. So, you know, why do you call for backup if you don't think you're
going to
need it?
The train maybe was going to attack him.
So anyway, they put their side on. We put our side on. I testified. The last thing we ended up on Thursday was several people came to me and said, you know, in the courtroom, came to me and said, boy, that attorney asked you some questions that he really probably didn't like your answer. I said, well, too
what,
bad.
What was that about?
Well, he asked me. He said, well, for example, he said, one of the things we're saying is that there was no alternative for her to go because we have a limit of 52 people on us. The city has placed 52 limit on us that says you can only have 52 people in your shelter.
Mm-hmm.
And so on November the 25th, we had more than 100. And so my attorney had me testify that indeed on that night we had over 100. Therefore, Miss Grew would have no alternative place to go because we're the only place in town.
Over 100, so that means they're going to go after you now for having too many people.
Oh, well, yeah, it was self-incriminating, and my attorney, you know, warned me against that, but that's
mm-hmm.
okay. You know, I've incriminated myself before.
Mm-hmm. You're notorious.
But, yeah, but anyway, so when he asked me that question, he said, how many people are you allowed to have? And I said, 52. This is a prosecutor. Mm-hmm. And he said, why do you have 52? Well, then I went into about a two-and-a-half-minute diatribe of saying, because the city of Buena Park is persecuting me, and because they persecuted me, then they prosecuted me, and they persecuted the homeless, and so he kept interrupting. He kept saying, I object, Your Honor, and so after about the fourth objection, after I went on about how poor Wiley Drake was being beat up by the city and being attacked by him and other people, finally, after about the third objection, the judge leaned over and said, Mr. Palmer, you asked the question.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't want an answer to the question, don't ask it.
Mm-hmm.
So we were able, I think, to do some damage even with his questions. But he's had the weekend now to draw the troops in. He's had the weekend to get his act together. Of course, our attorney is doing the same thing. And so it goes back to court on Monday. I don't know. My attorney said he probably will put me on again to testify, but he's not sure. And so it's really sort of, you know, at this point, it's a jury kind of thing. You know, it's what will the jury decide.
Now, these are two misdemeanors. One, storage of property, meaning she had her property out with her, and that was considered storage.
Yes. Uh-huh.
And the other, camping. These are both misdemeanors. Hence, she has faced this $2,000 fine and a year in jail,
that's
something like
correct.
That. For sleep, for how many nights of sleeping?
Well, actually, it would have been, you know, obviously she was there more than one night, but it would have only been for one night. Actually, when she was when she was arrested and put in handcuffs and hauled away in a paddy wagon for what's normally a sight and release, she indeed had been sleeping there the night before, but they basically got her for the one night.
Sleeping?
I think. Well, it wasn't even for one night.
If it was for more than one night, I can understand there being a 2-year jail sentence.
They did not get her for sleeping there overnight.
I was kidding about that, Wiley. How much do you estimate this is all costing the city of Buena Park?
Well, I do have one or two friends in the city.
I mean, jury trials customarily cost $10,000 to $20,000.
Yeah. Well, I do have a few friends in the city, and it's been told to me, obviously privately, that the Wiley Drake tab is well over $500,000.
But what about the Diane Grew
tab? Well, that's included in that.
I see.
That's, you know, anything that has to do with homelessness, it's Wiley Drake.
Right.
The SWAT team commander here was also the commander of the Wiley Drake Task Force, and he is now the chief of police in town, by the way.
The Wiley Drake Task Force being?
Being the neighborhood improvement task force that watches for trouble areas in town, gang activities, homeless activities, et cetera.
And religious activities supporting homeless people?
And religious activities supporting the homeless people, that's correct. Interestingly enough, we've been screaming here for about 4 or 5 years now that there is some problem with the Buena Park Police Department, and everybody has been saying, well, you're just sour grapes, you're just talking about the police department because you don't like it that they've gone after you. And to yesterday in the Los Angeles Times, there was an article quoted, one cop fired, another quits. One Buena Park officer was fired for sexual misconduct on the job. It seems he was assigned to a local high school as a police officer to the high school. A security guard, female, on the high school says he exposed himself. He said, that's a lie. I didn't do it. And we had a previous relationship, and she's just a spurned woman and trying to get me in trouble. Mm-hmm. Another officer arrested a woman at 3 o'clock in the morning. She did have a warrant, took her to the station, arrested her. She says that he searched her with his bare hands under her dress. She says she was taken to the station, released on her own recognizance. The same officer drove her back to her car, where she says he kissed her, began to fondle her, and indeed asked her for oral sex, and she refused and went away, and then she filed charges. So we have two of Buena Park's finest being charged with some pretty serious allegations, and to the best of my knowledge, the ones charging are not homeless.
Sounds like a skirty dandel to me.
Yeah.
So the Grew case, how's she doing? Where is she staying during the trial?
Well, she has been staying primarily with her attorney during the trial, and
that's your attorney, right?
That was my attorney and her attorney.
It would normally cost how many $1,000s to hire an attorney for this kind of work?
Well, this kind of case would be somewhere I would assume probably $15,000-$20,000.
Right.
Just for the attorney.
Right.
And expenses. And he's not only not charging that, but he lives in a nice place down in Dana Point, far away from Buena Park, and so he's keeping her there because, you know, he knows that the police will...
Let's hope he's not demanding sexual favors.
Absolutely not.
In fact,
he has a chaperone there.
I mean, some men prefer older women, you know.
Beg your pardon?
I'm making a rude comment. You know, it's interesting. Glenn Maurer, who's former public defender of Santa Barbara, I don't know if you know this, is now taking every homeless case that's coming along and using... He actually has won all but two out of a 20-odd cases, mostly camping cases, some other homeless-related cases. Two of them involve appeals, and he's successfully used the necessity defense. The necessity defense, in case our audience doesn't know, is the... essentially admitting the crime and then proving six elements that show that you committed the crime in order to avoid a greater evil. Has your attorney been successful in using the necessity defense either in this case or in other cases?
Well, we won't know. In my case and in previous cases, the judges absolutely refused. Prickett, for example, absolutely refused to allow the use of the necessity defense.
But the state Supreme Court, under the Tobe decision, I should say the Eichhorn decision,
mm-hmm.
is now requiring in camping cases that at least necessity be allowed in order to determine if any particular camping law, while maybe facially constitutional is unconstitutional as applied because of the fact that there is no legal place for people to go.
Well, in this case, with the Diane Grew case, the judge is allowing the necessity defense, but he indeed, in all honesty, is sort of still restricting it because he's saying you can't talk about anything the city has done, you know, with any kind of agenda, that kind of thing. So it's very difficult to prove those different probes of the necessity defense, as well as the prosecutor is saying that there are plenty of other shelters in Orange County, and there are some 50 other shelters in Orange County, but none of which are in any close walking distance. So it will remain to be seen. Yes, he is using the necessity defense. It will remain to be seen if the jury will realize, in all honesty, what the necessity defense is. And based on the instructions from the judge, I didn't hear the instructions, so I don't know. But sometimes, even though the judge, and I assure you, for example, a judge like Prickett, he might be forced by the ICORN thing to, quote, allow the necessity defense.
Mm-hmm.
But he would hamstring it so much. He would give instructions to the jury in such a way that, in all honesty, he would almost, you know, disallow the necessity defense, even though he would verbally say he did.
Ironically, Prickett was the guy who allowed you, who after finding you guilty of putting up homeless people in the church, said, but you've already done all your community service by putting all those homeless people up, right?
Right, and so he says, we're going to count it, we're going to give you 1,500 hours of community service and count it as time served, and nobody's going to jail, and we'll give you, but, you know, he tried to play Solomon and cut the baby in half, and then he gave me 3 years probation, sort of somehow placating the city. And so he was being a politician. He's an elected judge, and he also, you have to remember, he is a member and a missions pastor in Rose Drive's Friends Church, which is a Quaker church, Nixon church.
I resent that. I am not a homeless person.
Not a homeless person.
Well, so, in other words, he seems to have gotten a little more conservative if he's so furious with you over what seems such a little offense. I mean, although I guess judges are very jealous of their courtrooms and all that sort of thing.
Well, in the past 4 years that I've been in and out of the North Court justice system, I know most of the attorneys that work there on any kind of regular basis as they come in and out, and all of them know me, and we have as much a good relationship as you can have with attorneys.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I like to be careful of who I associate with. But
how do you get an attorney out of the tree?
How?
Cut the rope.
Cut the rope, okay. But anyway, they all tell me, I've heard this, if I've heard it once, I've literally heard it a dozen times, that Judge Prickett, Job, there's a scenario there somewhere. But anyway, Judge Prickett has the worst case of robitis.
Mm-hmm.
That they've ever seen. Mm-hmm. And that simply means that when he puts that robe on, he thinks he's God. I was, for example, told, not in his courtroom, but in another courtroom, typically, you know, in some courtrooms it's different, but in some courtrooms, when the judge walks in his robe, the bailiff says, all stand, judge now on the bench, or hear ye, court's in order, judge so-and-so presiding, remain standing, now you can be seated, kind of thing. Well, I refuse to stand when a judge comes into the courtroom.
Mm-hmm.
Because the bailiff and the court would tell you that the historical reason for standing is to honor the judge. That is not true. The reason, and if you go back to England, which is where we got our tradition, you go back to England and see the jurisprudence tradition that was set up in America, the reason the audience was standing and told to stand when they come into the room was not to honor the court, not to honor the judge, but to honor the Holy Bible that was being brought into the courtroom by the judge, because in those days, the judge walked in with the Holy Bible in his hand. Mm-hmm. And when you were sworn, the Bible that was there was the Bible that the judge brought in.
Mm-hmm.
And so you stand to honor, as we do in our church, anytime we read the Bible in our church, we stand to honor the reading of the Holy Scriptures. And that's why it was put in the courtroom. That's why the judges wear robes. The reason the judge is uplifting, you know, up higher than the rest. The reason a courtroom looks like a church, that was intentional.
Mm-hmm.
because it was supposed to be biblically based.
So you're just not showing any respect for the Bible or the judge.
No, no,
Riley.
If he brings in a Bible, I'll stand.
Oh, I see, he doesn't bring in the Bible.
He doesn't bring in the Bible anymore.
So maybe you should sort of toss the Bible to him as he comes in and say, here, Judge.
Here, Judge, carry this, yeah.
Well, listen, you have, at your own expense for the moment, though I'm going to try to refund you for some of this long-distance call, talked to us for about 45 minutes about the case of Diane Grew, a homeless woman charged with two misdemeanors, and the judge's determination that you, as a radio broadcaster and defender of homeless people, not be allowed even to exercise the normal rights that anybody going to court has, to attend a court, to speak into a cellular phone in the hallway, indeed even to a radio station if necessary, provided you're not tampering with the jury. And frankly, I think talking to a radio, into a telephone is not tampering with the jury, and you weren't even charged with tampering with the jury. So it was clearly a preemptive move by the judge to show his own power in the situation. And you weren't daunted by it, and you're filing a lawsuit in response. We're talking to Wiley Drake of Buena Park, California. Wiley, how can you be heard on the Internet if people want to hear your show?
Well, you just go to crusaderadio.com. That's all lowercase, all run together as a typical, you know, crusaderadio.com. And my show happens to be titled Wiley Drake in Buena Park. There's a show every hour on the hour on Crusade Radio, and you can go to that. My show is on at 9 a.m. for an hour. And so you just go to www.crusaderadio.com, and when you come up with a microphone in your face, you click on Listen Now, and it'll take you to the show that's on live at that time.
And you promise you're going to be talking about something other than Jesus for a while on Monday and Tuesday?
Oh, absolutely. I honestly do try to give a good balance. Our show is based on justice, mercy, and faith. And on any one particular show, those that would be offended might think, golly, this is all preaching. But if you listen to three shows, I promise you, you'll get a fair treatment. And in all honesty, with as many cases as we're doing, we're a little bit biased toward the justice side of it for the last couple of months, and probably will be for a while. But we try to give it a balance in those three areas.
You'll be giving us updates on the Grew case on Monday and Tuesday?
We sure will.
Wow. Wiley, appreciate you taking the time. Get a call. I mean, leave me a message at 831... No, I will call you, and
okay.
we'll arrange for some kind of refund for the money that you spent on this.
Okay, well, just call me, and I'll be doing my show live at 9 o'clock. I do have another case to appear on at 9 o'clock. I probably will. Well, obviously, I'm not going in the courthouse. One of the things we're going to do on Monday, we're going to be filing a motion to rescind the restraining order, and so I'm hoping that what we're doing is we file our case. Our case is on the books, and we're going to file again on Monday an order to rescind this stay-away order, and the judge and everybody will have to make a decision on that post-haste. So we should find out in a few days whether I'm allowed to go back in the courthouse or not, and we're asking them to rescind his order until the case is finished.
And, of course, Diane will learn whether she's got to go to jail or gets to go back and get arrested again for sleeping outside.
Yeah, that will probably happen. I would guess that Monday and Tuesday will probably wrap this case up. That's just a guess, though.
Finally, up here in Santa Cruz, there has been a claim by a pastor and an action taken by Camp Paradise, a homeless encampment, where the homeless people signed over all their goods and property to the pastor with the hope that the religious civil rights law of 2000, you may be familiar with it.
RLUIPA.
RLUIPA allows them to give special protection to religious services on public property and religious encampments,
mm-hmm.
Provided that any restrictions are A, there has to be a substantial government interest, and B,
right.
It has to be the least restrictive form. Is there a chance, for example, if a church set up a big tent outside on public property and said, this is a religious situation here, come and sleep here to homeless people, that could effectively challenge the Buena Park camping ban?
There's certainly a possibility of that. We have been talking about that, and in all honesty, the only reason we haven't pursued it is twofold, and I don't mean to poor mouth things, but we just don't have the money, if we thought we could do it, to quote, buy a tent right now. The other reason, of course, is we've been so caught up in these cases, we've just been sort of legally stretching our mind as much as we could, especially since we use pro bono people. But in all honesty, in the back of my mind at least, I'm thinking, thinking, you know, hey, I'm going to get somebody to donate a big tent. We set up a tent. We've got the property here to set it up on that would be perfectly safe. We have porta-potties. We have a generator. So, you know, we could certainly say, hey, we've got a perfectly safe environment here with a tent. This is a religious service. I mean, we've done that here before in this church. We've had religious revivals for a week long where we set up a tent.
Mm-hmm.
In those days, though, we had to go to the city and get a permit and all those kind of things, and
mm-hmm.
I'm sure they would insist on that again.
Mm-hmm.
And but basically what I'm thinking about doing is just getting a tent, setting it up, and then letting them be the bad guy. If they want to come in and shut us down, then we say, no, RLUIPA, you know?
RLUIPA, the religious act that was passed last year.
Right, right. Protects us. This is a church function. It's a religious function. And certainly it is a religious function for us, and we can prove that, you know, historically in the Bible, historically in Christianity. You know, it's not like we just decided to make this little activity we're doing a religious activity. It always has been.
Well, I'm hoping that Camp Paradise can do something similar. Maybe Reverend Jeff up here will get in touch with you, or possibly Larry Templeton, who is actually doing the religious services out there at the camp today. I will contact you later and give you more information about
Please
this,
do.
Maybe hook you up. Particularly your use of the necessity defense could be helpful. I know that it is one cases in Albany, California, in Santa Ana, California, in San Diego, and in Berkeley. So
there is also a case in Vermont, not totally alike, but very similar, where a guy was in a courthouse and he got kicked out of the courthouse. So we're going to be looking at that as well. So a lot of these things we can look at from other areas where people have won, and we're hoping, of course, the Diane Grew case will be really a turning point.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Reverend Wiley Drake, and should I say Freedom Fighter Drake, Radio Broadcaster Drake. Get yourself a transmitter and get off the Internet and get into the, you know, let those FM junkies get at you, man.
Okay. Well, we just, as divine appointment allows, we'll certainly do it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Keep up the good work.
Okay. Bye-bye.
And as usual, we're a little overtime here with the irrepressible Skidmark Bob in the studio, without his guitar, as usual, and without his young son, who's getting bigger and bigger. Skidmark has brought a CD, Camp Paradise Rated Interviews of Campers, which I guess he's going to play right after this show.
Yeah, just turn it on when you're done there.
And what I'll do is I'll put it on, and we'll go directly from Wiley Drake in Southern California to... Ooh, it's already on, huh?
All set up. All you gotta do is push play and put up CD number 3.
Hey, and that's gonna be it for Bathrob Spears Broadsides. But come on out to Camp Paradise, or come down to the vigil on Monday morning. As I understand it, some of these young, irrepressible vigilers, not us old geezers who are always babbling about the camping ban and the sleeping ban sections, will be doing a 24-hour, round-the-clock vigil at least until Wednesday, maybe Thursday. Who knows? They could go on forever if you... bring them enough coffee. Do you want to be on the air on Free Radio on the Bathrob Spears Broadside Show? We return on Thursday, 6 to 8 in the evenings. Give me a call at 831-423-HUFF, 831-423-HUFF. If you want to donate to Camp Paradise, you can do so through HUFF at 423-HUFF, 423-4833. You can learn about the vigil there, or you can just come on down to Camp Paradise, which is, I guess Bob probably describes it in his upcoming CD, which you're about to hear, a 20-minute or so CD. Stay with us for the Camp Paradise Rated by the SCPD and Interviews of Campers produced by Skidmark Bob. And thank you for being with us on this edition of Bathrob Spears Broadside.
Camp Paradise is an independent community of homeless people who have spent their own time, labor, and expenses cleaning up the east levee of the San Lorenzo River to create a safe, clean, and sober place for homeless people of Santa Cruz for the past 8 months. Their, quote, camping activity is against the Santa Cruz Municipal Code 6.36.10. Creating controversy between the city government and the police department, Mayor Tim Fitzmaurice and other city council members have communicated to the Santa Cruz police to make Camp Paradise a low priority of enforcement. On August 3rd, 2001, in the early hours of the morning, the Santa Cruz police raided and ticketed 30 homeless people for camping. I spoke with one of the ticketed campers, Richard Parsons.
All right, this is Skidmark Bob here at Camp Paradise. It is August 3rd, Friday, about 11:30 right now. How you doing? What's your name?
My name is Richard Parsons.
Richard.
Doing okay.
I understand that you guys got ticketed this morning.
Yeah, we got ticketed this morning about 7:30 for illegal camping.
Really? How many people got tickets?
About 30 of us got tickets.
30 tickets? How many cops?
There was five cops.
Five? Just five cops?
Yeah.
Did they have their weapons out? Did they threaten anybody?
No, not at all. They came to the tent, shook the tent, asked us to come out, asked us if we had an identification. I gave him the identification. He wrote me the ticket. Then he gave me a form to go over and get a two-day voucher for a motel room.
Oh, that's nice.
Instead to get out of camp. That's the only way I can get have a voucher if I get out of camp.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's like buying me to get out of here.
Then we closed it down, and now we're reopening it.
So, the only way you could get this hotel room, well, you have to go to the hotel room to get it signed, or you got
to
get it signed?
We go to the shelter.
Oh.
And they give us the two-day voucher. But after the 2 days, I would still come back here. I have nowhere else to go.
Yeah. Might as well take the hotel room.
Yeah. Yeah, it's been a long time since I slept in a real bed.
So, you just go to the shelter, and you sign a piece of paper or something?
Yeah, saying that would promise we don't come back.
Oh.
It's a two-day voucher.
I see. Did they threaten about ticketing anybody tomorrow or anything?
They told me that they would be back in 2 days, and I said, is that when you're going to come back and arrest me because I'm trespassing or what? And he says, that's subject to whatever happens at that time.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Huh. That's crazy.
Yeah, I'm absolutely going to stay. I have nowhere else to go. I eat here, sleep here, and I work during the day part-time for a friend.
How long you been here?
2.5 months.
2.5 months?
Yeah.
Right on. So this is one of the vouchers that you get here. It says Homeless Resource Card, City of Santa Cruz, Santa Cruz Police Department, Santa Cruz Community Resource Directory. I've never seen one of these. So you got this when?
When the officer issued me the ticket, he gave me this.
Uh-huh.
And he wrote the voucher on front and told me to go over to the Homeless Resource Center and that they would give me a voucher for 2 days. The motel room.
So you got to show them your ticket and then they give you the voucher.
Yeah, actually, I just have to show them this card with this writing that the officer wrote down and then they give me the voucher.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. It was the first time I've ever seen this.
So this is the first time they ticketed for anything, right?
Right.
They haven't come down here. I mean, they've come down here and hassled people, I've heard.
Right? Yes.
But they haven't really, like, done any ticketing.
No.
Did they say anything about you being here 48 hours after being ticketed?
Yes, they said that they would come back and we would solve the matter then. You could be arrested or something else would happen, sign a piece of paper for release or something like that.
Okay.
But he says you are subject to be arrested in 2 days.
Then what's your name again?
Richard Parsons.
Richard, thanks for talking with me. Anybody else have anything to say? How's it going?
I'm all right. How'd you tell?
Good. Did you get a ticket?
No, I didn't get a ticket. They asked me if I wanted one.
Really? Were you sleeping?
No, I was asleep when I heard them say Santa Cruz Police, and I just came up out of my tent, and they were like, well, you want a ticket? And I was like, no, and he's like, all right, and he just walked away. So I was happy with the result.
That's interesting. So 30 people got tickets, approximately?
Yeah,
is that what people are saying?
Roughly. Well, all over the levee, I would say, you know, not just here, people have been getting tickets all day long.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because I was just coming back from the law library past people who didn't live in this camp,
uh-huh.
And they got tickets, too.
Really? So people across over there, and so they did a little sweep,
like
a little homeless sweep or something?
Yep.
Wow, that's crazy.
Harassing the homeless.
They didn't take anything or destroy anything, huh? It looks like everything's cool. The garden's there. The garden's looking great, by the way. Take a look at the garden over here. So here we are at Camp Paradise. Apparently 30 people been ticketed. Nobody's been arrested. Supposedly they get little vouchers that say that they can get a couple nights in a hotel room. It's a lot less than what this place has been provided. And over here we got a compost bin. Looks like it's very nice. garden back here. Wish the radio folks could see it. Come on down to Camp Paradise. Check it out. Support it. I'm noticing a lot of tents are not here that are normally here.
One of the ticketed campers, Chris Foy, did some research on the camping ban and had this to say about it.
Citations, public nuisance declared. So you've been doing a little research?
Yeah, I have. And, I mean, this is all against the homeless. I mean, they're not offering you any place to sleep. You know, sleeping from 11 p.m. to 8:30 a.m., to sleep at any time between those hours, the following places: outdoors, with or without bedding, tent, hammock, or other similar protection or equipment. So they want you to sleep on the ground with nothing.
Uh-huh.
Okay?
Even sleeping is prohibited.
Right.
So if they come up and your eyes are closed, that's like sleeping conspiracy, or...
Yep. In, on, or under any structure not intended for human occupancy, whether with or without bedding, tent, hammock, or other similar protective equipment. In, on, under any parked vehicle. Now, this is common sense. I'm not going to sleep underneath somebody's car where they could run me over.
Right, right.
You know?
What are the times on that?
11 to 8:30 a.m. 11
so they
p.m.
came,
to 8:30 a.m.
What time did they
and
come?
They came at about 8.
By 8. Huh?
Yep.
Right at that limit, huh?
Right.
That must have been their shift change or something.
So
you kind of know, expect possibly when they might come. Other protests, I remember...
Freak Radio Santa Cruz. We have David Silva on the phone. David? Okay.
But I've been trying to keep track, even though my computer's been sabotaged several times.
Well, we'll get back to that interview in just a moment, but you had something.
I have an idea. Yeah, besides the vigil tomorrow, it seems to me that what the abolitionists are calling for, which is the powers that be at home at night, is a good idea, and I have a few numbers of some people, their home phone numbers, if you allow me to put those on the air.
Okay, let's do it quick. Give me that number again. I want that one. 429-1757 for the chief of police. Is this his home number?
Yeah, his home number. Chief Hammock is the chief of the Rangers. The Rangers are just as bad, if not worse.
Uh-huh.
438-6873.
Is that the Rangers?
Yeah, he's head of the Rangers.
Okay.
City Rangers.
Okay. Four five nine
two,
what?
2483.
2483 for the mayor.
Yeah,
mayor's office.
Riley, let's call her at work. At her business. 429-9866.
429 what?
9866.
9866.
Christopher Crone is 423-1066.
423-1066. Can you say a little slower?
Before, the ones you call at night. The ones I'm giving now are the ones you call at day. Okay. 420-5416.
Is that yours?
420-5100. 420-6250. 420-5250. 420-5270. 420-6295. I'm going to try to get to some of these police numbers. 420-6200. 420-5020, we all know that one. 420-5030. 420-5403. 420-6298. 420-5050. 420-6025. Where's the chief of police? 420-5870. 420-810. That should get you into the police, to Parks and Recs, to planning, to financing, and to a few other places that need to stop and consider what, you know, the values at Nuremberg were about.
Okay, well, how about if people could call you directly for all those numbers again?
8919.
What's that again?
786-8919.
786-8919.
And ask for Dave.
As for David. Okay.
David only.
Okay.
Okay, bye.
Bye. Back to the interview.
I come in about 6 in the morning. Yeah. But that was just right downtown, so it was a lot easier to deal with.
Yeah, I mean...
But you guys
aren't... Go?
There's nowhere to
and
go.
We got, you know, we got a family that just had a kid, you know, and they, every resource... She was in a motel, and they gave her vouchers, and then they cut her off, and she hadn't had the kid yet. So she's been down here for like 3 days and just had her kid. You know what it was like getting her up the levee? You know, if they don't want to take care of a pregnant woman, you know they're not going to take care of a single male or single female.
Right.
You know? And as far as it comes down to, they're not even going to be able to take care of... We've got, including me and my old lady, we've got like 12 couples here, maybe more. You know, where are you going to put couples up at?
Do you know what section people are cited under?
All of us were cited. Everybody was cited underneath the camping ban, the section 636-10. And everybody was cited underneath that. And then Larry was cited underneath a couple of other specifics, such as public nuisance, mutilation of plants.
What?
Yep.
There's
legal,
a garden growing over there.
Legal refuge, which they wrote the municipal code down wrong. They put down the municipal code, they put down the numbering, was for littering within 150 feet of the levee, but they put it underneath legal refuge. And then we've got altering the stream bed. Now, if you come back here and look.
Oh, the goldfish pond?
Right.
It's a small goldfish pond over here.
This has nothing to do with the river.
Right.
The water did not come from the river.
Right.
Was not altered from the river to here. We dug these pits and put water in it. Okay.
And this is part of the issue that they cited Larry with?
This is altering the stream bed. This is what it is right here. This has not altered the stream bed in any way, form, or size. There is no stream that runs from up above that we blocked off so it wouldn't run down here. This used to be a path with nothing in it, okay?
And it's a pond.
And, yeah, it's a pond.
And there's goldfish, beautiful goldfish in there.
It's a pond. It is not part of the river where we altered the river, cut it off in some way, and kept the water here. That isn't what happened. We brought water in and put it in here. We got the water actually from the cemetery, and with permission, okay? This was not altered in any way, form or size, from the river. But yet they gave him a 1603FG altering stream bed.
Altering stream bed. I didn't know that. There was that part. That's part of the camping ban?
No. Actually, that's totally underneath a whole different section. They gave him 5 tickets.
Gave Larry 5 tickets?
They gave Larry 5 tickets. mutilation of plants, which I don't think I got that. I might have. Abuse or mutilation of plants, trees, and lawn. First, you can't even climb a tree without it being mutilation of a plant.
Right.
It says right here, where was it? Attach any signs, wires, or injuries. I'm surprised they didn't get us for smoking them. I mean, there's so many things here.
Where did they get the mutilation of the trees? Is that
I don't know.
The kids that came and tagged those trees, did they try to blame that on? I know that, but did they try to blame that on?
I guess they did.
I mean, I don't see any mutilation of trees.
Yeah, and there were no trees in these paths. We didn't cut any trees after that. We didn't cut any trees along this levee.
Uh-huh.
We haven't messed with anything. You know, all this was already there, open space.
Right,
you know? These tents were open in open space. We didn't clear out plants so that we had tent space. You know? Not mutilated any trees.
Since when are cops environmental experts,
you know?
Anyway?
Yeah, and you know it does
so
not.
So Larry
say,
got he
it does
got
not say that you can't dig up the dirt and plant plants. It says climb any tree or plant, dig in or otherwise disturb plants, lawn or grass areas. There was no grass.
Uh-huh.
Okay, there was no plants where we put in the gardens. All this was already open space.
Right.
You know?
And it was a mess, too, because I remember there being trash everywhere, and you guys worked hard to get all that out of here.
No, I mean, there's one thing.
And you spent your own money, right?
Yeah, we spent all our own money, donated money, or, you know, we went out and got all the stuff that we needed through, you know, like the Bargain Barn or, you know, other places. You know, this
This is crazy. So what else did they get Larry for? Just because he's the somewhat leader.
Public nuisance. I'm not exactly sure what... Oh, that was because of these bike parks right here.
Oh, okay.
Okay? And they're saying that this is a public nuisance.
Looks like a place where people fix their bikes. How could that be a public nuisance?
That's what we'd like to know. You know, we're providing bikes for homeless people to be able to get around town easily. You know, we provide cheap services for people who have money and need their bikes rehauled, like that orange bike up on the rack.
Uh-huh.
A guy who is a pizza delivery guy, and he brought his bike down to us instead of to a bike shop to have his bike rebuilt by us for him. I mean, we're helping out the community. This is not, you know, a public nuisance. This is providing a service for the homeless that otherwise they would have no other course of action to.
And there's no other kind of transportation.
Here's our lawyer, actually.
For a bus.
I got to go talk to him.
All right. Well, thanks. What's your name again?
Chris Foy.
All right. Thanks, Chris.
Camp Paradise is located just north of the Highway 1 overpass on the east banks of the San Lorenzo River. If you'd like to go visit and support Camp Paradise, they could use water and trash bags and probably food or any other monetary donations. You can contact Camp Paradise at 458-6020. That's 458-6020, extension 105. Again, 458-6020, extension 105. Or I want to encourage everybody to go visit Camp Paradise. On my way out of Camp Paradise, I came upon two homeless people that were sleeping directly under the Highway 1 bridge, and they described the police officers as they came by. They did notice them, but they were not ticketed, coincidentally.
How you folks doing? It was August 3rd, 2001. You guys saw the cops come down underneath the bridge here? Uh-huh. Now, were you ticketed? Did they see you?